So we'll be talking about the topics of Ratha Yatra and the pastimes of Lord Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra, particularly how and why Krishna, Balaram and their sister Subhadra took these transcendental, ecstatic, most unusual forms of Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra, and also why they go out of the temple. Because most deities don't go out of the temple, right? You're not supposed to take the deities out of the temple. So why is it that we take Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra out of the temple every year? Like, what is the reason for this? How did that come to be? And then when we read Chaitanya Charitamrita, we hear that Lord Chaitanya, he had a specifically very, he had a strong attachment to Lord Jagannath. He spent half of his life in Puri, and every day he would take darshan and he would be in ecstasy in front of Jagannath. Sometimes he would faint in front of Jagannath and exhibit all kinds of ecstatic symptoms. We don't hear him having such an intimate relationship with any other deity. You don't even hear him going to a temple in Navadvip, practically speaking. But he's just so attached to Lord Jagannath. So why is that? And then just as Lord Chaitanya has an external and also internal reasons for his appearance, there are also external and internal reasons for Ratha Yatra. So we're going to talk about what those reasons are. And then here in Taranto Temple, we're very fortunate to have the deities of Gaur Nithai, Radha Krishna, and Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra. So then what are the relationships between these deities? How do they all combine together? And what is the connection, transcendental connection? And then if we get time, which I don't expect we will, but if we do get time, if Krishna wants to expand the time factor for us, then we'll talk about the special significance of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in relation to the Ratha Yatra pastime and all these pastimes that we're going to talk about. Okay? So, Om Ajnanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militanjena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanivyo Vaishnavivyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So it all starts out with Krishna in Vrindavan. So Krishna is living in Vrindavan with Balaram, his brother, and their mothers are there, Mother Yashoda and Rohini, who is the mother of Balaram. And of course the cowherd boys are there, and the gopis, and the cows, and so many eternal associates of Krishna are there in Vrindavan, enacting Krishna's pastimes. So this is one of the qualities of Krishna that distinguish him from other incarnations of the Lord, is that he's always surrounded by devotees who are imbued with ecstatic love for him, and they exhibit these transcendental, ecstatic loving pastimes together. So we see this most markedly in Vrindavan, the love and the loving exchanges and the dealings, and it's most exquisite and most perfect in Vrindavan. And of course, the most perfect, the best of all devotees in Vrindavan is Srimati Radharani. So Krishna's pastimes with the gopis headed by Srimati Radharani are the most intimate, the most confidential, the most sublime, and the most attractive. So Krishna, while he's in Vrindavan, he's engaging in so many of these pastimes with the gopis, and every day the gopis' attachment for him is growing, his attachment for the gopis is growing, and it gets to the point where they just, it's just a complete obsession. The gopis think of nothing but Krishna, Krishna thinks of nothing but the gopis. Even the other devotees in Vraj, who have different relationships with Krishna, they're also obsessed with this relationship between Radha and Krishna. Right? Mother Yashoda does things to facilitate their meeting. The cowherd boys, they're also sending messages back and forth. And even the cows are wandering into distant places so that Krishna can go and, chase them and herd them and meet Radharani somewhere. So all the associates are just, this is the cynosure. This is just like the perfection of life in Vrindavan, is the meeting and the loving exchanges between Radha and Krishna. So this is all going on, and everybody's, you know, immersed in an ocean of love for Krishna in these pastimes. And then one fateful day, Akrura comes to Vrindavan, and he says, Krishna, we need you. And Balaram, we need you too, because there's this demon Kamsa, and he's arranged a wrestling match, and you've been invited, but actually you need to go and really kill him. So Krishna, because he descends to... Krishna's a supreme enjoyer, so he is always enjoying his pastimes, and he exhibits... The pastimes that he exhibits in Vrindavan in this world are the same pastimes that he exhibits in Goloka Vrindavan. It's like a replica. He descends his dham. When he descends, his whole dham, Goloka Vrindavan, descends from the spiritual world to this planet, takes its place here, and all the personalities from the spiritual world come, and they do everything from the spiritual world here in the spiritual world, this little chunk of spiritual world in the material world, which is called Bhoma Vrindavan. But then Krishna, when he comes, he also has other business to do, because in the material world, people are harassed by demons. And particularly, he says, you know, paritranaya sarunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanam dharma samstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So he declares that this is one of the purposes of his descent to this world, is to kill the demons. So he doesn't really want to go, but he can't get out of it, because this is part of his mission. He's a responsible person. So when duty calls, Krishna, he has to go. So Krishna goes, but of course the gopis are so upset. Everybody's completely upset. The gopis are throwing their bodies in front of the chariot and, you know, begging Krishna to not leave. And then Krishna says, don't worry, I will return. So with those three words, the gopis are maintaining their lives in Vrindavan. All the Rajabasis are maintaining their lives, just hanging on the thin thread of those three words, the promise that I will return one day. So Krishna goes to Mathura, and he kills Kamsa, and then later on he transfers himself and everybody in Mathura over to Dwarka. And so after Krishna kills Kamsa, then Vasudeva and Devaki are released from prison, and Rohini, who was in Vrindavan just because Vasudeva was in jail, so he asked Nandamaraj, please look after my wife, because I'm not there to protect her, and there's a lot of demons about, so I wanted to be in charge of someone that I trust. So that's why Rohini was in Vrindavan, although she was a wife of Vasudeva. So as soon as Vasudeva got out of jail, then Rohini could go back and live with Vasudeva in Mathura, and then they were transferred to Dwarka. And then while they were in Dwarka, then Subhadra was born to Vasudeva and Devaki. So now in Dwarka, now we have Krishna, Balaram, Subhadra, they're all in Dwarka with Rohini, Vasudeva, Devaki, and all the Dwarka Vasis. And then eventually Krishna gets married gradually to 16,108 queens in Dwarka. So he's living there in 16,108 palaces with each one of those queens. And at night he goes to sleep. And while he's sleeping, he's dreaming about Vrindavan. So he's lying in bed with Rukmini, with, you know, in one palace, with Satyabhama in another palace, with different wives in different palaces. And Krishna is just dreaming about Srimati Radharani and the gopis of Vrindavan, all the Vrajabasis. And sometimes in his dreams, he speaks. He says, Radhe, Radhe, O Vrindavan, Radhe, when will I see you in Vrindavan Dham? When will we have our pastimes again together? So he's calling out like this in his sleep. And so he's lying there with Rukmini. Rukmini wakes up and she's like, what? What's he talking about? Who's Radharani? Because Krishna, he never told, even though, you know, sometimes intimate conversations between husband and wife, they'll speak about their childhood. Yeah, when I was a kid, I used to do this, and I had this girlfriend, and whatever. Krishna never spoke about any of that. He couldn't, because it was just too heart-wrenching. If he would say a word about Radharani, or any of the Vrajavasis for that matter, he wasn't going to be able to maintain his life in Dwarka. He was not going to be able to stay and do his duties. He was just going to have to run back to Vrindavan. So then the queens were totally unaware of all Krishna's childhood pastimes and his youthful pastimes in Vrindavan. But they knew that Rohini had been there with him, right? Rohini was there the whole time when Krishna was growing up. And so they were dying to know about these pastimes and what is Krishna talking about? Why is, you know, he loves us so much, but it seems that there, he has someone else that he loves more. What is going on here? We want to know. So then one day they go to Mother Rohini and they say, Rohini, you were there in Vrindavan with Krishna, and you know, we hear Krishna sometimes giving hints about his childhood and his youth and everything that he did. Please tell us. We want to know. We want to know all the details. So Rohini says, okay, I can tell you, but Krishna cannot hear this. Because if Krishna hears this, you're never going to see him again. And that's the last thing the queens want, right? So they say, okay, we're going to lock the door. We're going to keep a guard by the door. And so they chose Subhadra to be the guard. And then Rohini started narrating the pastimes, all the Raj Leela, everything that she had seen with her own eyes, to the extent that she had seen it. And so Subhadra's standing outside the door, and of course she's interested too, so because she also wasn't in Vrindavan, and so she's listening, and she's hearing these pastimes, and she's becoming ecstatic. She's like, oh my God, what is this? You know, she's like, and her eyes are getting really big, and then she becomes so ecstatic that like her limbs of her body go inside, and she becomes stunned. She becomes just frozen, like. And so that's the form of Subhadra. And then after some time, Lord Balaram comes by and he sees his sister standing out the door like, and he's like, what? What's going on? And she can't say anything because she's stunned, speechless. So then he hears some talking from behind the door, so he listens. And he also gets his ecstatic form of Balaram, so he's also stunned, speechless. And then Krishna comes by and he's like, my sister, my brother, what's going on? They're like two blocks of wood just standing there stunned with their eyes wide open. And so he listens and he also and he gets totally stiff. So then they're standing there, three of them, outside the door in Dwarka, Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra. So this is the first time that they manifest those forms. And then, as fate would have it, Narada Muni comes by. So Narada Muni comes by playing his veena, and he sees these forms. And as Narada, he sees them from a distance, and he's like, what? But before he can get close, then Krishna, Balaram, and Subhadra, they resume their normal forms. But Narada Muni, and they're kind of a little bit like, you know, no one was supposed to see us like that. But Narada's like, I saw it. It's too late, I already saw it. And then Krishna's like, okay, well, Narada, let me give you a benediction. Because Krishna always likes to benedict his devotees. So Narada says, yes, I have a request. That this form that I've just seen, Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra, will be eternally manifest. This will be one of your forms, that the world and the whole world will see you and know you in this form. So Krishna's like, so be it. Okay, so then, sometime later, there was a king, Indradumna. And he was going to a secluded place in the forest. There's a lot of details to this pastime, which I'm going to skip because we don't have time for them all. He was going to visit this deity of Krishna in the forest who was named Nilamadava. And so he would go every day and make offerings, prayers, like that. And he was very attached to this deity. And he really wanted the deity. He wanted to bring his men and take the deity to his kingdom and install the deity there to be worshipped nicely. So he was all set to do that, and then he goes to the forest place, and the day that he's going to get the deity and actually bring it to his kingdom, he goes and the deity's gone. It's totally just disappeared. And he pays his obeisances, just the altar, the asan where the deity was standing is there, you know, the remnants of the offerings, the previous day's offerings and the paraphernalia is still there, but the deity's gone. And he's so angry, he's like, who's stolen my deity? And he suspects another person who was previously hiding and secretly worshiping that deity. And he's like, I'm going to get that. I'm going to imprison him. I'm going to torture him until he tells me where the deity is. Like that. He's just very transcendentally upset. And then he hears a voice, a disembodied voice that says, my dear Indradumna Maharaj, you will not see me again in this form. But in the future, very soon, I will reveal myself in Puri. So you must go there, and in the sea near Puri, you will find that there will be three logs of wood floating. And you should take those logs and bring them and get a sculptor to carve my form, to carve deities out of me and also my brother and my sister, Krishna, Balaram, and Subhadra, out of those logs. And you can install them and build a beautiful temple there in Puri and install my deity there along with my brother and sister. So then Maharaj Indradyumna, he does. He goes there, he sees these logs. The logs are drifting up shore. They pull them in with great difficulty because they're so heavy, like nobody can lift them. And then he tries to find a sculptor. So it's very hard to find a sculptor because all the best sculptors in the land come, but as soon as they start to try to chisel, their tools break and they can't do it. They're hurting themselves and they're all just like, it's useless, I can't do anything with this. So the Maharaj Indradyumna, he's getting desperate, like, I need someone to carve. This was the Lord's order, direct order to me. I need to find a sculptor. And then one day this very skinny, very old, bent over Brahmin walks in. He says, I heard you need a sculptor. And he says, yeah, but you know, I had these big, strong, you know, burly sculptor men come in and they couldn't do anything. What are you going to do? He just looks like a skinny, wimpy old Brahmin. And he says, well, do you want me to try or not? And he says, yeah, I mean, there's nobody else at this point, so please. And he says, okay, I'll do it on one condition, that I do it behind closed doors and you give me 21 days. It will take me 21 days to do the job. No one can see it, no one can see my work until 21 days are up. And if someone does, then that's it, it's finished. I'm not continuing, I'm just going to leave. So then he says, okay. So they put the logs in a room, the Brahmin's in there, tools, they close the door, and Maharaj Indradyumna, he's so eager to see the deity because he's feeling like separation from this deity of Nilamadava, and he wants the exact form of that deity to be carved. And he's very eager to see it. So he's waiting outside the door every day. He just basically wakes up and goes there by the door, sits there all day. He's barely sleeping. He's just by the door listening. And he's hearing this chink, 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 all day, every day, day after day. And his eagerness is increasing. And then finally, it's 14 days already he's been waiting. And he can't stand it anymore. And he's listening, chink, 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 chink. He hears the carving stops, and then he thinks, ooh, it sounds like he's finished. Maybe he finished early. I mean, there's 7 days left, but I mean, if he's done, he's done, right? So then he just bursts into the door, and then the sculptor looks at him, kind of frowns at him, and just disappears. He doesn't walk out of the room, he just disappears. And that's it. And then Maharaj Indradyumna looks at the deities, and, you know, there's some kind of like, you know, maybe some semblance of a head and a body, and a couple of them have some, you know, stump-like looking arms that, you know, are obviously not finished. The hands are not there. There's no fingers. There's no legs. The faces are just kind of very rudimentary. There's maybe a little bit of a nose coming out. But, you know, he's thinking, oh, no, I totally blew it. You know, I'm never going to see that deity again, and now the one sculptor on the planet that could even make a dent in those logs is gone, and it's all my fault. I've committed a huge offense, and he's about to basically kill himself. He feels so bad. And then he hears a voice again, and it's the voice of Nilamadava, the same voice that spoke to him there in the forest, and it says, Maharaj Indradyumna, my dear devotee, you haven't committed any offense. It's actually my desire that I manifest in this exact form. And so you should take these forms and paint them and install them on the altar and worship me in these forms. This is actually an eternal form of mine as Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra. So why does the Lord have this form? One reason is because we heard that outside the door, it was feeling ecstatic. So the reason they were feeling ecstatic was because of separation, right? They were feeling, Krishna and Balaram were feeling separation from Vrindavan, from Radharani, from the gopis, from the coward boys, from Yashoda and Nandaraj and all that they were hearing from, hearing about. So then Krishna was always feeling this. The whole time that he was in Dwarka, he was feeling intense separation to the extent that, and he knew that the gopis were also practically dying from separation from him. And so he sent different people to the gopis to try to console them. So first he sent Uddhava. Uddhava was so dear to Krishna. Uddhava was like the right-hand man of Krishna. He was his minister, he was his friend. Krishna would reveal, he was the person that Krishna would reveal his mind to and consult, and even consult when he wasn't sure how to handle a, you know, some political situation. And whenever Uddhava gave advice, he would accept it, like this was coming from God, even though he was God, even though Krishna is God himself. And Uddhava is his servant. And Uddhava always considered himself a servant, but as a service, he would sometimes advise Krishna and just hear him, just, you know, do some empathic listening to Krishna. So Uddhava was very aware of Krishna. He was the one, Uddhava was the one person that Krishna did reveal a few things about his Vrindavan relationships to. So then Krishna sent Uddhava to console the gopis. He sent him with a letter, a love letter, reassuring him, reassuring them, reassuring the gopis and Radharani that he did love them, that he was thinking of, he hadn't forgotten about them, and that he would be coming. So the gopis heard this, and just the thought of Krishna made them even more insane with love and more painful from separation. And so Uddhava, he could see that the gopis were basically inconsolable. And he said, all right, I can see that the only thing that is going to satisfy you is to bring Krishna back. Trust me, I'm going to go to Dwarka, I'm going to talk to Krishna, I'm going to make him come back. Maybe he doesn't understand your situation here. Maybe he doesn't understand how you're practically dying without him. I'm going to make him come. Just give me 2 months, he'll be here. So with that, Uddhava left. But Uddhava went, and he did. He begged, he pleaded, he bargained, he did everything he could with Krishna to try to induce him to go to Vrindavan. And Krishna kept saying, yeah, I'll go, but he never went. And so many years passed, decades passed. Many decades passed, and Krishna didn't go to Vrindavan. And then again, Krishna was thinking, these gopis, my God, you know, they're missing me so much, and Uddhava keeps nagging me. And so he decides to send Balaram. So Uddhava couldn't console them, maybe Balaram can, because Balaram is, you know, is also the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He has all my potencies. So if anyone can console them, it's Balaram. And Krishna's thinking, I can't go myself, because if I go, I'll never come back, and all these demons are going to run rampant, they're going to destroy everything, and they're going to come to Vrindavan, they're also going to kill the Brajabasis. That can't happen. So he's thinking, I have to stay, but let me send Balaram. So Balaram goes in the same thing, same situation. He tries to console the gopis. He has his own pastimes with his own gopis, but he also talks to Krishna's gopis, and he's like, you know, just close your eyes, just try to meditate on Krishna. And by Balaram's potencies, he was able to give them a little bit of an experience of Krishna within their hearts and within their minds during that visit. But it was just like it was just a taste that made it worse. You know, it's like if you're really hungry, you know, let's say you went out to do some service, you went on book distribution, and then you're trying to come back, but you get delayed, and you're supposed to be back for lunch, and you're used to eating lunch at 1:30, and somehow time is just passing, you're really hungry, it's 3:30, and, you know, your fire of digestion is just burning your stomach out. And then somebody, you're with another devotee, and they bought a bag of potato chips, and they're like, you're like, I'm so hungry, I'm starving, when's prasadam, we didn't get back, I'm dying of hunger. And they're like, well, do you want a few chips? And you're just like, so you eat the few chips, and it just makes it worse, you know? It just like incites your hunger even more, but doesn't satisfy it. It just like increases, it just flames your fire even more, and you're just burning. So that was the situation after Balaram went, and he gave them that little experience. It just fueled their fire, the pain of separation, the burning pain of separation. So then Balaram went back, and he said, Krishna, you know, you really have to go. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to go. But he didn't go. And more decades passed. Practically 100 years passed. And then one day there was an eclipse. And so at the time of an eclipse, it's an inauspicious time. So then everybody wants to go to a holy place to protect themselves from the inauspicious, you know, influence of the eclipse. So then all the Yadus decide to go to Kurukshetra, which is, it's a holy place. This was before the Battle of Kurukshetra, but it's a holy place where in ancient times Maharaj Kuru performed a big sacrifice, huge sacrifice. And so that place is sacred because of that, the yajna that took place there. So they all go there, all the Yadus, and Krishna goes with all of his queens, with Uddhava, with Balaram, with all of the ministers, and all the other kings from the surrounding areas, they also go. And they all go in chariots with their horses, with all their soldiers and royal paraphernalia, and their elephants and their weapons and everything. And the Brajavasis also decide to go, because everybody's basically coming from everywhere to Kurukshetra. Like, that is the place to stay during this eclipse. So the Brajavasis also go, including, you know, Yashoda, Nanaraj, the cowherd boys, the gopis, they're all there. So the gopis actually see Krishna at Kurukshetra. Krishna sees the gopis at Kurukshetra, but it's like they're there, they're together, but they can't actually be together in the way that they want to be together, because it's just not the right mood. You know, it's like there's all this clanging of soldiers, and there's people around with weapons, and there's horses going clonk, 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 and there's no beautiful forest groves, there's no, you know, breezes of jasmine flowers, and what can they do? You know, 16,108 queens there. You know, how are the gopis going to get close to Krishna? You know, they're just persona non grata, you know, compared to all these royal queens and kings and people. And even Krishna himself, you know, he's not wearing his peacock feather, he's not playing his flute, he's got these shoes on. They never, you know, it's like, why is Krishna wearing even shoes? And, you know, there's no forest flowers in his hair, he's wearing this crazy helmet, and his hair is all tucked. And it's like, ugh. It's like so close, but yet so far, you know? So, that again just increases their feelings of separation. And Krishna also. Krishna also, he's just like, it's too much for his heart. So the eclipse finishes, the sacrifice, the Kurus, they went there, they did this big sacrifice to, you know, invoke auspiciousness, and it's all over, and everybody goes back to their places. But in the minds of the Brajavasis, they're just like, how can we go back to Vrindavan without Krishna? How can we just leave him there at Kurukshetra? How can we just let him go back to Dwarka? He has to come back with us. He's part of us. He's our family. Mother Yashoda's like, he's my son. The like, he's one of us. He doesn't belong there. This is totally foreign to him. He's a fish out of water. He's not happy. We can see that he's not happy in that scenario. He was so happy in Vrindavan. What is he doing outside of Vrindavan for so long? It's been like so long. It's been 100 years. This is just so wrong. So in their hearts, they're pulling Krishna back to Vrindavan. But Krishna's not coming. Not yet, anyway. He still has demons to kill. So then he goes, he's killing demons, he's killing Jarasandha and Kaliyavana, and the whole battlefield of Kurukshetra takes place, and all the demonic Kauravas and all their demoniac allies are killed. And then finally there's one last demon, Dantavakra, who is killed. And then, that's it. No more demons to kill. All the demons are done. So Krishna's business, the whole reason that he left Vrindavan to do this business, it's done. And so as soon as Dantavakra is dead, then Krishna's mind begins to change. He's like, he immediately starts thinking of Vrindavan. Like, as soon as the business is over, it's immediately he starts thinking of Vrindavan, and he's thinking of Mother Yashoda, he's thinking of his friends, he's thinking of the gopis, he's thinking of Radharani. He gets this vision of Radharani in her mind, in his mind, and he's thinking of how much she must be suffering, missing him. And he faints. He just falls unconscious. Boom. On the ground. So he's lying there on the ground. And then Uddhava and Narada Muni come. And they're like, oh my God, look at the state of Krishna. What are we going to do? We need to bring him back to consciousness. Narada Muni's like, easy. I know how to do this. I'm going to play my veena. I'm going to sing some sweet song of Vrindavan Leela. And Krishna's going to wake up because that's what he wants, and that will refresh him, and that will remind him of where he needs to be right now, and that this is all over and it's time to go back to Vrindavan. And he's just going to jump up and he's going to go to Vrindavan and happily live happily ever after. So Narada Muni's got it all figured out. And then Uddhava says, Okay, that can work. That's a great idea, and we can do that. But the problem is that if Krishna just jumps up and runs to Vrindavan now, he's going to be in for a big shock. It's not going to be a happy sight. Because I've been to Vrindavan. I've seen the situation there with everybody in separation from Krishna, and it is not a pretty sight. You know, they are practically dead. They're so miserable. They're not milking the cows. They're not cleaning their houses. Mother Yashoda's house is just full of dust and cobwebs, and they're practically starving because they have no trade. They're not making any milk products. They can't go to other... They're just subsisting on the charity of other villages who are bringing some fruits and vegetables, but even then they can't eat. They're all skinny. They're emaciated. Their complexions are gone blackish. They're just lying there on the ground, all of them, just like, Krishna, when are you coming? So if Krishna sees them in that emaciated and blackened and just devastated state, then what is he going to think? How is he going to feel? We don't want Krishna to have to undergo that difficulty. So it's good if we send someone first, Uddhava is saying. It's good if we send someone first, tell them all, tell all the Rajabhasis, Krishna's coming. Krishna's coming. Cheer up, brighten up, go take a shower, put on clean clothes, do your hair, make garlands, get ready, cook, you know, prepare an offering. Krishna's coming. So he just wants Vrindavan to be like it was. So then Narada's like, yeah, okay, great idea. So then you go do it. Uddhava's like, oh my God, I can't go. I already tried this. We did this once. I went there. I told them. I tried to console them. I told them Krishna's coming. And 100 years have passed and Krishna still hasn't come. They're not going to believe me. They're going to say, Uddhava, you told us before. You told us Krishna was going to come before. And you didn't. You're just a liar. You're just cheating us. Just get out of here. We don't want to see your face. They're not going to listen to me, he told Narada Muni. So then Balaram came. Balaram just happened to walk by. And he saw the situation. Krishna's lying on the floor. Uddhava's totally in anxiety. Narada's wondering what to do. Balaram's like, can I help? Narada's like, yeah, can you go to Vrindavan and just tell them that Krishna's coming? We have this whole plan. We're going to wake up Krishna. We're going to take him to Vrindavan. Balaram's like, ooh, I can't go. You know, I did that. I tried. I went to try to console the gopis, and they're not going to believe me. They're just going to say, yeah, you said Krishna was going to come. You gave us this whole, you made us do this whole meditation. And it was all just a complete farce, and it just made matters worse. We wish you had never even come. Just like, you know, you should know you're Krishna's brother. You were here with us when we were doing all these pastimes, you know, like, and you just totally let us down. So I'm sorry. As much as we would love to believe you, we can't believe you. We're not convinced that Krishna's coming. So then Subhadra came. And she saw, actually Balaram was crying. He was crying because he was so frustrated and so sad that he wasn't able to do this service. And so Subhadra came. She sees one brother unconscious, another brother in tears. And she's like, what can I do to help? So Narada explains the situation. She's like, I'll go. They don't even know me. I've never even been to Vrindavan. I've never told them any false promises. And also, I'm a girl. So, you know, everybody knows that men lie. But women are known to be pure and simple-hearted. And when I tell them, they're going to believe it. And it's all going to be good. So just, let's go. So they had already prepared the chariot for Krishna to go. Krishna's chariot was waiting. Daruka, his driver, was there at the reins. And they prepared a chariot for Subhadra also to go. And then Balaram said, oh, but you know, you're a young lady, and the world is a dangerous place. You know, there were so many demons around just recently. And, you know, Krishna, he's not going to be to help you because he's just going to be, like, delirious. He's going to be in another state of mind. He's probably not even going to notice you there. I should come. I need to come to protect you. So I'll go. I'll lead the way. Anybody tries to bother us, I'll, you know, deal with them, and you'll be protected. You'll be in between us. And then when we get there, you know, you go talk to them, and I'll just stay in the background. So that was the plan. So they got another chariot now for Balaram. So Balaram's chariot's in the front, Lady Subhadra's chariot's in the middle, and Krishna's chariot's there in the back. So Balaram's there, Subhadra's there. Now they just need to get Krishna on his chariot. So now Narada goes with the veena, and he does Narad Muni Bajai. He starts playing his veena and singing some sweet song about some vraj pastimes. And then Krishna hears that, the transcendental sound vibration goes in his ear, goes to his heart. Krishna jumps up. And he's thinking he's in Vrindavan already. When he jumps up, he's in his threefold bending form. He never exhibited that form in Mathura, nor in Dwarka. Only in Vrindavan he shows that form. He is totally in Vrindavan consciousness. The whole time he was he fell unconscious thinking of Radharani and Vrindavan. The whole time he was unconscious, he's thinking of Radharani and Vrindavan. And now he hears these songs of Radharani and Vrindavan, and he's immediately like, where is my flute? Because I need to call the gopis. I need to call Radharani. I need to tell them that I'm here, and we're going to meet, and we're going to have pastimes, and we're going to dance, and we're going to sing, and it's just like old times. So he's looking around, where is my flute? And Narada Muni says, wait, we're not in Vrindavan yet, but we're going to go there. And Krishna's like, we're going to go there. Yes, we're going to go there. And he's just in this totally drunken state where he's like half delirious. He's, am I in Vrindavan? Am I not in Vrindavan? He's thinking, where is my flute? The gopis have stolen my flute. They did that again. They do this all the time. They stole my flute. I need to get it back. Narada Muni, where are they? So Narada's like, just. So he's in this state and he's like trembling with ecstasy. And Narada and Uddhava are struggling to get him on the chariot because he's wanting to run, he's wanting to dance, he's shaking. And in Ratha Yatra, when the devotees take Lord Balaram onto the cart, he's also shaking and they're struggling, and there's a whole pastime in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that it's written like that. So they finally get him on the chariot, and then they go. So they go there, and then First, Balaram and Subhadra arrive, but as soon as when they see the Brajbasis and they see what kind of state they're in, and they understand the intensity of their love for Krishna, it just blows their minds. And then they start remembering all the things that Rohini was saying, and now they're seeing it in actual, real life, living, breathing color, and their eyes become all dilated, and they become ecstatic. And they both assume their forms, these, you know, super duper ecstatic transcendental forms of Baladev and Subhadra. So then, you know, they had a good plan, but it was all foiled because now they can't talk, they can't move, they can't walk, they're just stuck like that. And the Brajavasis don't know what's going on, but they're a little bit, but everybody's coming, you know, they're all coming because they're like, wait, that was, I thought it was Balaram, and you know, we heard that he had a sister, and maybe something's happening here, but we don't know what, and we wish they could tell us. So all the Brajbasis are coming, but they can't say anything. And so Radharani is there, and she's still just totally in a state of devastation. She's lying on the ground with her head in the lap of Lalita, and Vishakha is there fanning her and trying to keep her alive. And there's so many details that happened that I'm not going to say now. but Krishna arrives. So Krishna arrives, and he's coming from a distance. And let me make sure I get this right. And Krishna sees Radharani. He sees her lying there. And as soon as he sees her, he also becomes stunned. He's like, this person, this, you know, the love of his life, who he hasn't seen for over 100 years, and there she is. And he just, like, he's approaching her, he's running there, but all of a sudden he just stops. And he just takes a second and he just looks at her. And then his eyes get all big, and his limbs go in, and his legs go into his body, and he just assumes the Jagannath form of Jagannath, and he faints. And he falls on the ground. So then Radharani still hasn't even seen him. She's literally almost dead. She's like an invalid lying there on the ground. So she didn't even notice that Krishna had come. But then a breeze blows, and it blows the fragrance of Krishna's body over that form that's lying unconscious on the ground into the nostrils of Radharani, who's lying practically unconscious on the ground. And then that transcendental aroma permeates her being and brings her to a state of, you know, alertness. Like, oh, I know that smell. I know that smell. That's Krishna. So she sits up, and then she sees Krishna's there. And then she becomes very ecstatic. And she says, Lalita, it's Krishna. but he's just lying there. Like, we need to do something. So then Lalita, she takes the fan and she starts fanning Radharani in such a way that the fragrance of Radharani's transcendental form is blowing over to Krishna's direction. She thought, well, it worked with Krishna and Radharani. Let's hope it works on the other way around. So then, and Vishakha goes and she's singing in the ear of Krishna, songs of Radharani, the names of Radharani. And then Krishna, he's revived, and he sits up, and Radharani's sitting up, and Krishna's sitting up, and they look at each other, and their eyes meet. And all of a sudden, all those years, those long years of separation, just are completely forgotten. And it's as if they were never separated. It's just like old times. It's just like it never ended. And even Radharani says that. She says, Krishna, we're here together. We've always been here together. You know, I think that Dwarka, Mathura, I think that was just a dream, right? It was just a bad dream. We've always been together, isn't it? And Krishna's like, you know, he doesn't know what to think. But all the Vrajavasis are there. And so they say, but Radha and Krishna are finally together. Come, this is wonderful. This is a festival. We brought all kinds of paraphernalia here for worship. Sit down together. You should sit here. Let us worship you. Let us see you together. We've been wanting to see you together for all these years. Please, like, give us this darshan. So then they take Krishna and Radharani and they put them on a jeweled throne and they offer an aarti. And this is actually, and it happened that this was around 4 o'clock, 4:30 in the morning. This is the original Mangal aarti. And so what makes it so mangala or so auspicious is that it's the meeting of Radha and Krishna after so many years of separation. So when we do our Mangalarti, we can meditate also that this Radha and Krishna have come together, they've been seated together, and the Brajavasis are all there offering arti, and it's the feeling, you know, the love, the ecstatic love that's flowing in that assembly, that group, is something very amazing. And they're singing, they're dancing. And so after that's done, then Krishna goes and he says, you know, Radharani, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry that I had to leave, that I was away for so long. And I hope you'll please forgive me and accept a benediction, any benediction. And so Radharani says, yes, I have a request. That let this form that I've seen of you, this ecstatic form, the Jagannath form, be eternally manifested. And let it be seen by the whole world. Let it be worshipped by the whole world. It's the same request that Narada had. So you see that when pure devotees, when multiple pure devotees all desire the same thing, then we can understand that that's the desire of the Lord, that Krishna desired to manifest himself in those forms. But Radharani, she added another thing, because not only that you will be manifest in that form, but both of us, we will be manifest together in these forms with this heightened emotion of love in separation and meeting, that we, after a long period of separation, we've just met. So then Krishna says, yes, I have this whole plan. That not only me, but because my brother Balaram and sister Subhadra made this happen, they brought about this meeting, they're also going to be manifest in this form with me. That I'm going to appear in the future as Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra, and I'm going to be installed as my deity form there in Puri. And I'm going to go out. I'm going to show this form to the whole world by going out onto the street, which no other deity does. But I'm going to go out and give my darshan to the whole world. Let the whole world see what your love does to me. So then Radharani said, wow, that sounds wonderful, but what about my form? What about, how is that going to be shown? And then Krishna says, yes, I'm also going to exhibit your form, your complexion, your mood, and your love for me in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we're going to be together in Puri. And whenever I, in the form of Lord Jagannath, see myself in the form of Lord Chaitanya, I'm not going to see myself, I'm going to see you. And whenever you, in your form as Lord Chaitanya, although it's both of us combined, but whenever you in that form see Jagannath, you're going to see me, Shyama Sundar. The same Shyamasundar form as was Nilamadava, the same Nilamadava. And Jagannath Puri is called Nilachal because there's a blue mountain there. Nila means blue. And so Nilamadava lives in Nilachal as Jagannath, the deity that Indradyumna Swami hankered for and arranged for the carving for, manifests as Jagannath and resides eternally there in Nilachala. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we can see that this happened, that Lord Chaitanya, when he's on Ratha Yatra, he's looking at the deity of Lord Jagannath, and he's in this mood of Radharani that, you know, and they're doing kirtan, and they're dancing, and then all of a sudden Lord Chaitanya breaks into this song, which is actually, it's not a devotional song that he's singing, it's like a karmi pop song. He starts singing. It's just a love song, it's some mundane love song. And this is the verse from Madhya Leela 13:121. That very personality who stole away my heart during my youth is now again my master. These are the same moonlit nights of the month of Chaitra. The same fragrance of malati flowers is there, and the same sweet breezes are blowing from the Kadamba forest. In our intimate relationship, I am also the same lover. Yet my mind is not happy here. I am eager to go back to that place on the bank of the Reva, under the Vetasi tree. That is my desire. So devotees in Ratha Yatra are hearing Lord Chaitanya singing this love song, and they're thinking, you know, about some mundane guy who has a girlfriend and he's been missing her. And they're thinking, Lord Chaitanya is a sannyasi. Why is he singing mundane love songs? They were so bewildered. I mean, they weren't criticizing. They were just like totally confused. Like, what? Like, what is wrong with this picture? You know, this just doesn't seem, it doesn't, like, what is going on? So nobody understood. The only person who understood was Swarup Damodar, because Swarup Damodar is Vishakha. And Vishakha is the closest girlfriend of Radharani. Lalita is very close, but she's a little older. She's more like a guru friend, like a guru. Whereas Lalita is just like a very, like a peer. Like, they're the same age, always together. She really understands Radharani's heart. So, and because Lord Chaitanya is in the mood of Radharani, then Vishakha, she gets it. You know, she understands what Lord Chaitanya is thinking. But Swarup Damodar is the only one. Actually, there's another person, but nobody knows about this. But after the Ratha Yatra is over, then Lord Chaitanya, when he was in Puri, he used to go every day to visit a few people who couldn't go to Jagannath temple. So one was Haridas Thakur, and another was Rupa Goswami. Because Rupa Goswami had associated with Muslims, he was rejected from the Hindu community, he couldn't go to the temple. And so Lord Chaitanya would visit him, and he was staying in a small, you know, straw hut at the outskirts of Puri. So Lord Chaitanya went, and he went to see him, and Rupa Goswami wasn't there, he was out taking his bath. So Lord Chaitanya was just hanging around and looking around, and then he saw there was something stuck in the roof, this straw roof. There was some palm leaf that had some writing on it that was hanging out there. So he, out of curiosity, he just took it. And he read it. And then he immediately became ecstatic. Because what that verse said was, it was a verse that was composed by Rupa Goswami, which interpreted this mundane love song that Lord Chaitanya had chanted in exactly the way that Lord Chaitanya was feeling it, in exactly, you know, the mood that Lord Chaitanya was singing it in. And so this is the verse composed by Rupa Goswami from Madhya Leela 176. And this verse is spoken by Srimati Radharani. My dear friend, now I have met my very old and dear friend Krishna on this field of Kurukshetra. I am the same Radharani, and now we are meeting together. It is very pleasant, but still, I would like to go to the bank of the Yamuna, beneath the trees of the forest there. I wish to hear the vibration of the sweet flute playing the fifth note within that forest of Vrindavan. So this is the mood of the Ratha Yatra. This is Lord Chaitanya's mood in Ratha Yatra, that in the mood of Radharani, she wants to bring Krishna to Vrindavan. And Krishna is also in the mood of, Jagannath is Krishna in the mood of separation from Vrindavan, from Radha and Vrindavan, that he's going to Vrindavan. And so, you know, thanks to Rupa Goswami, we have this internal meaning of Ratha Yatra. And so just as Uddhava and Narada and Balaram and Subhadra and Dwarka and so many arranged for Krishna to go from Dwarka to Vrindavan in the original Ratha Yatra, then so many devotees here over the past few months have been arranging for Ratha Yatra. And so we can meditate on this, we can meditate on this mood, that when we see Jagannath there on the cart, that he's Krishna and he's just hankering for Radharani's association. He's totally ecstatic, just meditating on her love, and he wants to go back to Vrindavan. And that we are pulling, we're helping, we're serving Krishna and we're serving Radharani by bringing them together in Vrindavan again. So that's the internal reason for Ratha Yatra. And the external reason, of course, is that Srimati Radharani is the compassionate energy of the Lord. She's the personification of Krishna's Ladini Shakti, which is the energy of compassion, of bliss, of love. And so she wants, out of her compassion, she wants everyone to have Krishna's darshan. So the external reason of Ratha Yatra is to fulfill the desire of the pure devotees, Srimati Radharani herself and also Narada Muni, to give Krishna's darshan, give Krishna's merciful glance to the whole world. So then we also, in our Ratha Yatra festivals, they're also not just for relishing the internal, but also for preaching. It's like one of the biggest preachings that most ISKCON temples do in the year. There's so many people are attracted and people come and Festival of India. And so we want to try to, everybody, try to connect with new people and try to give them, extend to them the mercy of Krishna, the compassion of Radharani, in the compassionate mood of Radharani today. Give them a book, give them, make sure they get prasadam, teach them the Maha Mantra, ask them if they have any questions. Just be friendly. Just be friendly and inviting and make them feel like they're welcome, that this festival is their festival, it's for them. And then Jagannath will be pleased. And Srila Prabhupada will be pleased. Because that's why Srila Prabhupada was so happy to have Ratha Yatra, because of all these reasons. Okay. So there's no time for questions. And I don't know if I could answer any questions anyway. So we'll call it quits here. Shri Shri Jagannath Baladev Sivajra Ki Jai. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki. Shri Jagannath Ratha Yatra Ki. Shri La Prabhupada Ki. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Gaur.